The week gone by has brought us to the brink of military intervention in Syria. The UK is out, the US is still in. At home, former Taoiseach Brian Cowan says nobody is more sorry than he. Anyone without a television in the corner was branded as a caveman, and it's 50 years since Martin Luther King told us about his dream. Joining me for a look back at these stories are Mary Bonotti, former Fine Gael MEP, Dr. Graham Finlay, UCD academic with a special interest in international relations, and Dr. Vincent Durack, who lectures in the politics of the Middle East. Good morning to you all. Before we come to any of that, we have to announce, unfortunately, the sad news, a breaking story, but the sad news of the death of Seamus Heaney, the Nobel Prize winning Irish poet laureate, who has died at the age of 74. We will be staying on the air. We were to go off the air at 11:30, but we will be staying on the air until midday in order to address that sad, sad news. We will be coming back to it. We will be talking about the wonderful life and the wonderful work of Seamus Heaney in half an hour from now, or 20 minutes from now. But Mary Bonotti, you knew the man personally.
I did, yes. He's a neighbour. He lives on Sandymount Road. Yeah. I'm really sad. I'm not sure I'm able to talk about it. But we were both UN Goodwill ambassadors, and we had great fun in New York being Goodwill ambassadors. And you could meet him around Sandymount all the time. So despite his great and wonderful career and as a writer and as a representative of his country, he was also a really nice guy. Mm. And I'm so sorry for his wife and family.
And indeed, somebody who was a great sense of fun, as you say, and also a great sense of self-deprecation.
Yes. Oh, yes. He could play that game as well, because I remember when we were in New York, Muhammad Ali came into the room, and I said, "Jesus, Seamus, there's Muhammad Ali. We've got to have our photo taken with him." And he said, "Oh no, gosh, we can't do that." I said, "Seamus, if you don't come over and have your photo taken with Muhammad Ali, I'm going to tell your children you refused." So we had a lovely photo taken with Muhammad, and he sent me a note saying, "You were dead right." Mm. They were delighted with the photograph. So he moved around with ease and grace, and he was, in every sense of the word, somebody the whole country can be proud of.
Absolutely. And 100% class act. And our sympathies to Mary and to the family, amongst whom is journalist Mick Heaney. But as I say, we will come back to talk about Seamus Heaney at 11:30. And we're actually going to break off a little, and we're going to discuss Seamus Heaney now, because we have Yvan Boland on the line. Yvan Boland, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
I'm not sure whether you're talking to me from Stanford or from
no,
Dublin.
No, I'm actually in Dublin.
You're in Dublin. So your response, your reaction to this news?
Oh, it's first of all my sympathy to Mary and the children, you know, from my heart, and it's a huge, huge loss. You know, it's really, it's hard to process it, Miles. He was an extraordinarily good poet, but he also was the keeper of a wonderful conversation about poetry. And, you know, losing both those things and losing the human being is going to be a tremendous, tremendous loss here. And I, who didn't by any means always agree with Seamus, will particularly miss his excellence, his commitment, and his, I think, dedication to being a good witness for poetry.
He was, as you say, not just a poet. He was a poetic intellectual. He was somebody who thought about his craft. He was somebody who could talk learnedly about his craft and about other practitioners of that craft.
Yes, learnedly and lovingly. And, I mean, in his early prose writings, when you look at them now, it's amazing how eloquent and prescient he is about a figure like Patrick Kavanagh, who was an influence on him, but he also understood him at several levels, at several depths. And, you know, that ability to talk about poetry, to place it in context, you know, I know myself and so many other people would be glad for what's there, but also enormously miss that. He was a he was a very unusual keeper of that conversation.
Is there an outstanding volume? Obviously, his poetic output was prodigious. His poetic output not only was prodigious, but there was there was an incredible quality to it. He would not have won as many prizes and awards as he did, including the Nobel Prize for Literature. But is there one volume in particular that stands out, do you think?
Well, to give somewhat of an indirect answer, I think there's two. I think the volume North, which was a mid-career volume, which was his fourth volume, and it would have come out in about 1975, which looks a very long time ago, but was very involved with his trying to locate himself as an almost unwilling public poet. And that was a very moving, very powerful book, contains a lot of poems that people would consider some of his very best, like Punishment. But the second volume is the one published a year or so ago, which is called Human Chain. And it's ironic in a sense. It is a book with a very mortal sense. And I've been reading it over the last month or so while I've been back here looking at it again. And it's a book of great depth and craft and power. And those would be the two books, I think, representing very powerful sides of his work.
So he was somebody whose powers did not wane as he got on in life.
No, like every poet. I mean, you know, poetry is an uneven sort of craft. You can find in one of Robert Frost's worst books, in 1939, you can find his best poem, Director. There isn't a graph or a barometer you can exactly put. But no, he's not a poet whose powers waned. He's a poet of great depth. And his the tremendous power, I mean, there's an absolutely beautiful poem and a few beautiful poems about his stroke. And I think the human frailty that he felt, and that in sort of contrast, I think, to North, makes him a private poet of really heartbreaking reach in that last book.
Yvanne Bolan, thank you very much indeed for that appreciation of your fellow poet Seamus Heaney, who has died sadly today at the age of 74. We're also joined on the line by John Kelly of this parish, arts presenter and friend of Seamus Heaney. John, you have lost a friend today, haven't you?
Sure have, and I've only just heard, I suppose like everybody else, I'm in a state of shock. I've known that Seamus hasn't been in the best of health for a long time, and I must admit, you know, I often contemplated, you know, his absence, because, you know, at times he didn't seem to be in the best of health, but this is a massive shock, and actually I'm in my office at home here, and you know, Twitter is how you discover these things nowadays, and I was just casually reading through things, and suddenly I saw the Seamus Heaney RIP. It's a strange way to find out about the death of a friend, but
it is increasingly the way in which we find out things nowadays, as you point out.
I'm just looking at a photograph on the wall here of David Hammond, who is gone, and Seamus, who is gone, and myself out on a film shoot, the three of us leaning up against a tree having a good time. Those were two people who were hugely important in my life, David Hammond and Seamus. They were very close friends. And, you know, that we're losing these people is just awful. It's just awful. I mean, I'm not going to be talking like some kind of a journalist here or you know, with fine words, because I don't know what to say. I really don't. I mean, I'm looking at my desk. There's an envelope here he sent me a couple of weeks ago. I was writing something myself, and I emailed him and said, "Do you remember what color the American GI is? What color was their uniform?" Because I wanted to check that with him, because he would have remembered them from when he was a kid. And he sent me a book written by a cousin of his. And there's an envelope with the handwriting and the address and everything on it. You know, all that's so familiar to me. It's a real blow.
Was he, above all, a Northern poet? How informed was he by the fact that he was a dairyman, that he was a Northern Irelander?
Well, completely, but also, you know, the global poet, no doubt about it, you know, one of the absolute greats. The fact that it's from part of the world close to mine and very similar in language and everything was kind of extraordinary. The Northern thing's very obviously the root of it all. But, you know, it's quite curious when you were with Seamus in company, you know, on his right-hand side, he might have been talking to the the Empress of Japan, and on the other side he might be talking to me in strange northern code, you know. So it was quite a bizarre scenario, you know. But yes, northern, absolutely.
How did his stroke affect him in the last years of his life?
I don't know, other than he sort of looked, he aged, you know, he got older. Maybe a line he might have used himself, I'm sure, but other people, he started to look a bit wee in his clothes, you know. He started to get older looking than he actually was. And I was quite conscious of that. And I saw him a few times at readings where he would come out and I'd think, God, Seamus looks very failed. But then he'd rise up, you know, and deliver the reading. But then you'd see him sort of shrink a little again. So he looked old. He looked older than he actually was. And it was only maybe when you looked at photographs of him maybe 10 years before you'd realise the change in his appearance and so on. But he was always in great spirits when I ran into him. Probably less so in recent times, you know, because, you know, you always had to leave, you know, you're always conscious of giving Seamus his space in his room. So, I mean, if he was going off to Glanmore, you wouldn't follow him, you know, you'd leave him to it. And he was still travelling a lot and very, very busy. But to be honest, at the minute I'm thinking, you know, I should be ringing the boys and stuff. You know, it's one of these things that it's obviously this is a big national event, you know, and there's going to be a massive hoo-ha. But, you know, this is just someone who's been part of my life since I was a kid. I mean, at school, you know, when we got that book handed out, Selected Poems, and there was this man on the front in the big coat standing on the beach in Sandymount, and been introduced to those poems that we all remember. And then just over the years, largely through David Hammond, and also, I suppose, through work, having the privilege, as you would have had, Miles, of actually sitting down and talking to him uninterrupted for half an hour, which was something that could only happen when you were on the radio or television with someone like Seamus, because if you're having a chat with him in a bar, people would be over, you know, talking to him and interrupting and stuff. So to have that privilege of talking to him uninterrupted for a period was always a great thing. And to be able to meet him in different occasions, you know, and he would do anything for you, incredibly kind. I mean, I remember once going on holiday and forgotten a driver's license, and, you know, he went round to my place and he got a key and he FedExed this and you know, this kind of stuff. He'd do all those sorts of things for you. He'd always have an encouraging word, you know, if things weren't going well in your job or something like that, the letter would arrive straight, you know, wishing you well and all that kind of stuff. So very a man who took great care of people, took great care of writers, of younger writers. And, you know, I remember distinctly after he won the Nobel Prize being around, everybody was congratulating him and the party went on for quite a while. But I remember looking at his fax machine, which was just constantly pouring out requests, demands, letters, people wanting him to do things. And one of them might be from, you know, a school in County Derry wanted him to judge a poetry competition. The next one might be from Vaclav Havel. The next one might be from somebody, you know, I've just written my first book, what do you think of it? The next one could be from President Clinton, you know, and it was constant. And he dealt with everybody with the same grace and magnanimity, you know, he really did.
He was also half of a partnership. I mean, Mary was a huge mainstay to him, wasn't she?
Oh, well, Mary's an incredible woman, absolutely incredible. And, you know, I don't know what to say about Mary or what she must be feeling now. But they were an amazing couple. They really were. And you know, she protected him and defended him, and
sense of humor. She is a woman with a fantastic sense of humor.
Great humor and great. You know, I know a lot of those Devlins and Barry, and you know, they're all sound and solid people, and Mary would be the one you'd see at the end of the night would say, you know, right, I'm getting him out of here. And sometimes, you know, getting Seamus out of a room was the same way as getting Bono out of a room or getting Bob Dylan out of a room. You know, it had to be organised. It had, right, you know, he's gone. Bye. It had to be done. Because, you know, you'd have to see it to believe it, but, you know, people queued round the block to get books signed, you know, one after another. And it was just, you know, and I saw it in other cities. It wasn't just in Ireland, you know. And he would do his best for everybody. But this could take hours, you know, at the end of the event. And, you know, he's trying to speak to his friends and say hello to his friends. And he had a massive network of friends all over the world. And these were people of all walks of life and all levels of learning, you know. So one minute he's talking to me and the next minute he's talking to, you know, a professor of poetry at, you know, Harvard or whatever it was, you know, because that's what he was. But talking to people and without ever condescending to anybody, just being perfectly good company in whatever company he was in. You know, I remember one day we were all talking about Homer. Now, the Homer we were talking about was Homer Simpson.
Oh, right, you know? Okay. I would have thought that Seamus Heaney would be talking about a different Homer.
No, exactly. No, it was Homer Simpson. And you know, just things like that. And he, you know, I'm gonna miss hearing him speak. You know, I always loved occasions where Seamus would, never mind the poetry readings, but when he'd get up and say a few words, you know, if it was at a wedding or it was at, you know, at somebody's funeral or whatever, when Seamus got up to say a few words, it was just electricity, you know.
Right.
Extraordinary.
Let's actually hear that, seeing as how you mentioned. Let's hear that voice. John Kelly, thank you very much for talking to us about your friend Seamus Heaney. And this is probably one of his best-known poems. It's certainly a poem that would be known to more people than possibly any of his other poems, partly because of the fact that it has been on school curricula for some time now. This is the emotional, poignant and very, very striking Midterm Break, which Seamus, of course, wrote about the early death of his young brother.
I sat all morning in the college sick bay, counting bells, nailing classes to a close. At 2 o'clock, our neighbours drove me home. In the porch, I met my father crying. He had always taken funerals in his stride. And Big Jim Evans, saying it was a hard blow. The baby cooed and laughed and rocked the pram when I came in. And I was embarrassed by old men standing up to shake my hand and tell me they were sorry for my trouble. Whispers informed strangers I was the eldest, away at school, as my mother held my hand in hers and coughed out angry, tearless sighs. At 10 o'clock the ambulance arrived with the corpse, stanched and bandaged by the nurses. Next morning I went up into the room. Snowdrops and candles soothed the bedside. I saw him for the first time in 6 weeks. Paler now, wearing a poppy bruise on his left temple, he lay in the 4-foot box as in his cot. No gaudy scars. The bumper knocked him clear. A 4-foot box, a foot for every year.
Possibly his best-known closing line. That's from Midterm Break. That's the voice of Seamus Heaney reading that poem, that wonderful and poignant poem. And a poignant day, the death of Seamus Heaney announced at the age of 74. John Montague, good morning to you. John Montague, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Very sad to be talking to you in these circumstances and in these conditions, but what are your memories of Seamus Heaney?
Oh, God bless us. You're asking me for a torrent. First of all, I'd have to say that I'm not surprised. I knew he was in bad health, and only this last weekend I was with his son in the north, in the Skidden, for the festival, and he said his father was not in good shape. So it's not unexpected. He was a fine poet, and we had many discussions, especially because I was Tyrone and he was Derry. And we knew the local histories, and we were able to have many a laugh. It should ask now won't continue. Hello?
John, I think the line is just too bad at the moment, and I think we're going to try and get you back on a better line to do justice to your contribution to the memory of Seamus Heaney. But joining me on the line is friend of Seamus Heaney, poet and friend of Seamus, Peter Sir, who wrote the introduction to the RTE collected works of Seamus Heaney. Peter Sir, good morning to you.
Good morning, Miles.
What are your memories of Seamus Heaney?
Well, I'm just, to be honest, I'm still registering the shock of the news, Miles. And, you know, I have to say that my first thoughts go to his family, to Mary and to his children, Chris, and Michael and his grandchildren, and because I mean, this is on one level, of course, it's a global event, but it's also firstly a family event. So I'm just conscious of that. And again, you know, there are so many, I suppose, memories. I wouldn't say I was a close friend of his. I knew him and I valued him enormously, you know, as a man and as a poet. And I think, you know, to try and take the news in. I mean, he died. It's too soon. I know he was. He wasn't well, and he had been frail for a number of years after his stroke. But at the same time, you also have this kind of notion that somebody like Seamus, you have this kind of sense of a graceful, permanent, almost presence that's always in the world somehow, and you kind of never step back to think that, you know, you might wake up one day and learn that he isn't in it anymore. So it's kind of, you know, that sense you have of somebody enduring, both the man and the poet. So it's hard. I mean, I can remember sitting, I suppose this time last year, interviewing him in public during the Franco-Irish kind of literary festival, or I can remember having an informal kind of lunch with him recently, and so all those things. And again, you know, the work is what you keep going back to. I mean, there is such an enormous kind of legacy in terms of what he has left us as a poet, as somebody who thought deeply all of his life and wrote brilliantly about poetry. You know, I mean, he achieved so much in his life, and he left us with so much, you know. So I'm sorry,
I can sense that you are battling an emotion, emotion, as we all are.
I'm walking on the street with my wife because we heard the news this morning, and we kind of obviously we're both very kind of shocked by it, and we kind of took to the streets to kind of walk a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, I suppose there is so much that you can say really about him and the work. It's hard to know where to begin, really.
Stay with us if you would, because also on the line is poet Thomas Kinsella, who would be a contemporary, very much a contemporary of Seamus Heaney. Thomas Kinsella, good morning to you. Thomas Kinsella, can you hear me? No, okay. Let me go back to Peter Sir for a moment. Peter, he's also there's the public element to the poetry of Seamus Heaney, and he's somebody who could be seen as having stepped up to the plate as a public poet. He wrote poetry that didn't necessarily course popularity in certain quarters, shall we say?
No, he didn't. I mean, and you know, he came to maturity at a time of conflict, and you know, as part of the whole generation of poets that came out of the north of Ireland at a time when that was in the midst of a great kind of conflagration, and so a whole realm of responsibilities inevitably was kind of thrust upon those poets, and a lot of expectations, not all of which were entirely reasonable, you know, in the sense that, you know, people expected poets to be spokesmen for one particular tribe or another, and if they didn't commit themselves weren't seen in their work to commit themselves to one particular tribe, they were seen as letting the side down in some way. And I think that, you know, Seamus Heaney had to walk a very fine line in that, and I think that's evident in the work. I'm thinking particularly of those early books, you know, kind of the Wintering Out, North, field work, or on in works like Station Island, you know, where he addresses all of those issues, and he speaks as a poet, you know, who out of his own experience, but out of the experience of his particular province and out of the experience of his country. And, you know, the poetry with kind of an awareness of kind of tanks rumbling down the tomb road or relatives killed. And the expectations of journalists kind of ringing up looking for opinions, all of that he had to deal with. But he was a poet. He was a poet of deep privacy, but you know, in that he wrote in many ways astonishingly of, you know, his early childhood, and the childhood was an enormous kind of engine in the poetry, and the memory of that. The memory of Mossbourne and of the, you know, the life of the farm and his mother and all of that. We just heard some of it in midterm break, but he looked at that so intensely that, you know, it became a kind of public, or if you like, a global kind of poetry as well. It's a universal kind of poetry. So I mean, yeah, he talked himself about, you know, sometimes the poet is kind of vate, is a kind of spokesman. And you know, he was that, and he was a deeply private man and poet at the same time. The two things kind of intersected, really.
Mm. Thomas Kinsella does join us now. Thomas Kinsella, good morning to you.
Hello, Miles.
How important was that element of Seamus Heaney as a poet, the public poetry,
well,
the fact that he didn't abjure reflection?
Still in a state of shock.
Right. Okay.
And,
well, let's express that.
I'm just feeling, you know, how unexpected. It's a really an extraordinary event, the powerful presence taken from just the centre of our scene. And my first reaction after the shock, and the shock is still continuing, is a memory of his very earliest poems. I knew straight away that we were dealing with the real thing. And I'm off now. I'll just go back. I'm leaving you just to... It'll take a while for me to assess the full extent of that shock. And all I can say is God rest him and God help us all.
Well, thank you very much indeed for joining us, however briefly, this morning, and for that reflection. That's Thomas Kinsella, fellow poet and somebody who would have observed the career of Seamus Heaney from, as he points out there himself, a very early age. Fellow artist, fellow writer Colm McCann joins us now. Colm, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And
hello, how are you?
You presumably have just heard. You've just heard the news yourself.
Literally, just just woke up about 5 minutes ago. It's hard to say, you know, what to think. Except, I suppose that what he would want us to think is, in the sense that he just brought such an incredible joy to us, and sort of across the board amongst you know, amongst scholars, amongst lovers of poetry and intellectuals. And just as a truly decent man, a person who operated so well in the world, and for me, what was always important about Seamus was how he sort of helped us negotiate our sense of ourselves, especially during the peace process, and especially you know, as a person who was able to put hold us together at that particular time, you know, and make these sort of really genuine forays and expeditions into what was for me just a pure reservoir of joy. Even my kids now, this morning, my 10-year-old will he knows some of Seamus's poems off by heart, and so this will go to the heart of a lot of things and a lot of people.
And obviously you would have a better sense than most of us, because of the fact that you live in New York, you live in the USA, a better sense than most of us of the international reputation of Seamus Heaney. He was a huge poet, a very important poet internationally, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know whether I would have the better sense, or just if you feel the sort of collective shock that'll move through people this morning, and just the genuine sadness that's going to be there, but also the way that people will talk about him, you know, not just 5 years from now or 10 years from now, but there is a sort of feeling that some fantastic sort of original spirit is always there, and I can tell you that there's so many young writers around the place who will feel it too, because the other thing is that Seamus was just prepared to open himself up to young writers everywhere, to read their stuff and to encourage them and to believe in the fact and the mystery and also the very power of poetry. He was a great essayist as well, and one of our great intellectuals, and yet with such a real generosity of spirit. I often saw him here in New York, and people would crowd around him, and I have to say, a wonderful sense of humor, and how to live. And I hope everyone in his family that's who my thoughts go out to this morning, waking up with this news.
Well, thank you very much indeed for taking our call this morning at the very early hour of, it's about 6:30 in the morning in New York. That was Colm McCann, novelist, on the line there from New York. If you're just joining us expecting Ronan Collins, he'll be with you after 12 as we're staying on air to talk about the great Irish poet and Nobel laureate Seamus Heaney, who's died at the age of 74. But now we'll take a break. As I said before the break, if you've just joined us expecting Ronan Collins, he'll be with you at 12 o'clock. But we're staying on the air. We're talking about the death of the great Irish poet and Nobel laureate Seamus Heaney. And on the line is Minister for Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht, Jimmy Dinahan. Jimmy Dinahan, we've obviously lost a giant today.
Well, absolutely. And what struck me most about Seamus over the years, I would have met him obviously at Writers' Week in Listowel. Since I became minister, I've met him at various launches, including when he donated his material to the National Library. And just a few weeks ago, I spent a very, very enjoyable evening with him in Paris and with his wife, Marie, and we stayed together in the ambassador's residence in Paris, and he performed there to a huge audience, about 1,000 people outdoors in the Irish Cultural Centre in Paris, and you could just sense the respect that people had for him on that occasion, and it was a huge success. But he was just a very humble, modest man, as we all know, and he was very accessible. And anywhere I ever travelled in the world, and if you mention poetry and Ireland and literature, the name of Seamus Heaney just came up in conversation immediately. I was in China there before Christmas, and I was in the National Library, and a number of his works have been translated into Chinese, and that's the way all over the world. So he was a huge figure internationally. He was just a great ambassador for literature, obviously, but also for Ireland. And he is going to be really missed, I think, in so many different ways.
But also from a political point of view, he had a huge importance because he wasn't just an artist. He was also a commentator on events, through his poetry as well, which was even more important, I would have thought.
Well, it was, and I suppose I would be maybe attracted to some of his material on the value of our great peatlands, boglands, and he was really, that's how I suppose he established himself first. He had some really classic poems on boglands, and I think he rose great awareness of the value of our boglands in this country, just as an example. But certainly he had a global reach, and he had major influence on people, and I suppose the test of any writer is that he was quoted so much, and he came up on a very, very regular basis when even people were writing political commentary. I suppose one bit of advice he had at one stage for politicians was, whatever you say, say nothing. But certainly he made a major impact in Ireland, and won a Nobel Award in 1995, no doubt. Was a major, an immense achievement, and he joined just a very small elite of writers, but also of Irish writers as well.
Jimmy Dinahan, thank you very much for joining us this morning to give praise to Seamus Heaney, who has died at the age of 74. Also on the line is John Horgan, the press ombudsman, who was friend of Seamus Heaney for more than 40 years. I think, John, you go back, your relationship with Seamus Heaney goes back to your days as a reporter in the Irish Times.
To the Belfast Festival of 1965, I think that's when I first met him. And he's been a fast friend ever since, so it's a long relationship in which, as in most of his relationships, Seamus gave far more than he ever received.
You remember a travelling road show that he did with Michael Longley called Room to Rhyme.
Not only Michael Longley, but David Hammond, who was a great, great friend of Seamus and of Mary, and who sadly predeceased him a couple of years ago. It was a marvellous occasion because they were funded by the Arts Council in Northern Ireland to go around to all sorts of small towns which hadn't really seen or heard this kind of caravanserai before, and with Michael and Seamus reading and David playing his guitar and singing, it was an extraordinary revelation for most of these small towns, and sowed the seeds, I'm sure, of many other things in the future. I know that he was greatly influenced by David Hammond, by other friends of his who were older than him, and it's a measure of the man how he took these influences and transmuted them in himself and made them available to a much wider audience.
And he did continue. I mean, he proselytized for poetry in a sense. He popularized poetry. He was a great reader of his own poetry.
He was a great listener and a great talker and a great reader, and even those who hadn't heard him read, I think, would have recognized on the printed page the way that he exemplified the fact that great poetry touches the part of you that other words just can't reach. And it's an electric kind of feeling, and he exemplified that.
He was also somebody we've heard who was very, very generous in so many ways. He was very supportive of writers. He was generous, for example, in giving his literary material to the National Library of Ireland.
He was. He spoke from time to time about what he would describe almost in a self-deprecatory kind of fashion as the Nobel thing. But what it did, I think, in his life was that even though up to then he had been quite extraordinarily generous with his time and his abilities to all sorts of people in all walks of life, when that happened, he regarded himself, I think, as having an even greater, a turbocharged kind of responsibility to writing and to Ireland. And the degree to which he felt obliged to fulfill that responsibility, even when physically he became a bit weaker after his illness, was, I think, quite extraordinary act of public service.
We don't have a pantheon in this country, as do the French, but were we to have one, would he be in there with Yeats, Beckett, Shaw and Oscar Wilde?
Well, there's no question about that. He had a genius not only for poetry, but for many other things, for friendship, for listening, for giving of himself, really, in a way that very few colossi, and he was a colossus, very few people who have that status have managed to.
And John Horgan, thank you very much indeed for talking to us and for joining us this morning and for your appreciation of your friend Seamus Heaney. We're going to hear some more of the man himself. We're going to hear the voice of Seamus Heaney from the collected poems. And this was the collection of Seamus Heaney reading his poems from RTE. This is a poem that he wrote a number of years back, and it was relating to Amnesty International, about Amnesty International, the work of Amnesty International, and a tribute to that work. This is The Republic of Conscience.
From The Republic of Conscience. 1. When I landed in the Republic of Conscience, it was so noiseless when the engine stopped, I could hear a curlew high above the runway. At immigration, the clerk was an old man who produced a wallet from his homespun coat and showed me a photograph of my grandfather. The woman in customs asked me to declare the words of our traditional cures and charms to heal dumbness and avert the evil eye. No porters, no interpreter, no taxi. You carried your own burden, and very soon your symptoms of creeping privilege disappeared. 2. Fog is a dreaded omen there, but lightning spells universal good, and parents hang swaddled infants in trees during thunderstorms. Salt is their precious mineral, and seashells are held to the ear during births and funerals. The base of all inks and pigments is seawater. Their sacred symbol is a stylized boat. The sail is an ear, the mast a sloping pen, the hull a mouth shape, the keel an open eye. At their inauguration, public leaders must swear to uphold unwritten law and weep to atone for their presumption to hold office and to affirm their faith that all life sprang from salt in tears which the sky god wept after he dreamt his solitude was endless. 3. I came back from that frugal republic with my two arms the one length, the customs woman having insisted my allowance was myself. The old man rose and gazed into my face and said that was official recognition that I was now a dual citizen. He therefore desired me, when I got home, to consider myself a representative and to speak on their behalf in my own tongue. Their embassies, he said, were everywhere, but operated independently, and no ambassador would ever be relieved.
And that's the Republic of Conscience from the collection The Hall Lantern, and the royalties, any royalties arising out of that poem went to Amnesty International. I'm joined in studio by Kevin Reynolds, producer, colleague here in RTE, and on the line by RTE colleague Darren Evrain. Darren, first of all to you, as has Kevin, you met Seamus quite recently.
I did indeed. In fact, I'm just thinking that poem that he just read so beautifully is hanging in poster form in my downstairs bathroom. I'm still recovering from the shock, Miles, to tell you the truth. We in Cumann Merryman at the Merryman Summer School have had the great pleasure of having Seamus as our patron for the last 5 or 6 years. And I was in two minds about asking him would he come and read this summer, because he was constantly being asked to do things and he was very bad at saying no. But since he'd been ill a couple of years ago, he had learned to say no a bit more, and I hated being the one who had to ask. But I did ask and he graciously agreed to come. And not only that, Michael Longley came as well. And they did a magnificent reading at the Merryman Summer School just a fortnight ago, and were joined by an extraordinary mumming group, the Armagh Rhymers, which made it all the more exceptional. It was just an incredible occasion. Both he and Longley, as John Horgan said, went right back to that Room to Rhyme tour so long ago. And it was just fantastic to see them together. They were together on stage and they kind of batted back and forth with each other and chatted. And it was a magical evening. I think anybody who was there that night would agree. And we were so, so lucky to have him.
If I were to use one adjective to describe him, it would be avuncular. Was that one that you would identify with?
Avuncular, yes, true, that would fit. But I think, and other people, including the minister, have mentioned his generosity. He was an exceptionally generous and humble man. I mean, I've known him for, well, many, many years. Oh, not quite as long as John Horgan, but not that long after that. And his book of poetry, Death of the Naturalist, was the very, very first book of poetry I ever bought in my life. And I continued to buy them after that and got to know him over the years. And yes, he was a supreme talent. And we must never forget that, because as a poet in international terms, as well as in Irish terms, his legacy is absolutely extraordinary. But as a human being, he was wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, Kevin
absolutely
would agree.
Absolutely,
there,
Darren. Kevin, and my deepest sympathies to everybody, to Mary, to Catherine Ann, Michael, Christopher, and the extended Devlin and Heaney families. I think Miles, yourself, myself, everybody who knew Seamus. The theme that's coming through is that Seamus was, yes, a major talent and all that, but he was a shocking, decent man.
Humility.
He was the most decent man you'd meet in a day's walk. He was generous to a fault with his time, with his conversation. And I had the pleasure of meeting him 2 weeks ago. I used to drop down a wild salmon to him. I get a bit of salmon out in Howth every year. And I went down. And for some particular reason, the family were all going to the horse show this year. And I just said, I'll bring in the children. So we said a quick hello to him. And indeed, there, and he was on the way down to the Merryman and he was on the way up to the Fla. And I said, you're a great man. I just said, who's doing the driving? And he just put his hands up to heaven and said, well, sure. And it was just so typical of the man. He's a huge loss to all of us who knew him. He's a huge loss to people who didn't know him, but knew him through his work. And he's a huge loss to people who will only come to know him in the future, because Seamus will live, like every poet and like every great poet, through his poetry forever.
Indeed he will. indeed, Kevin, thank you very much indeed for that tribute to Seamus Heaney, who, if you've just joined us, has sadly died at the age of 74, the poet laureate. And our sympathies, as Kevin said, to his family, to Mary, his wife, to Catherine Ann, to Michael and to Christopher, his children, and to the extended Heaney and Devlin families. And Arieish they. Garev Anam Dealish. That's it for me. Sean is here on Monday. The very best of luck indeed to Sean, and the beginning of an entirely new career for him, I suppose. Over now to Ronan Collins.